Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 96 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, it is a live event. Well, not live anymore, but it was a live event from the RAFA pop-up in Washington, D.C. late last week, and I was talking to Ben Frederick. This is a four-peat for Ben Frederick. I think, other than our regular panel members, he may have the record for guest spots on this show. Always worthwhile talking to Ben. Always good to catch up on his story. There are three other episodes. That makes perfect sense. This is the fourth one that we talked to Ben. If you want, go back and listen to those. It's he was an up and coming aspiring racer, moved up to Massachusetts to be in that community of cyclocross, and then had a head injury, and he's been dealing with that ever since. So we talked to him, I think, at the end of last year, and so it's good to get an update on what's going on in Ben's life and see where he is at now. So that's what we're going to listen to momentarily. First off, I want to tell you about an amazing cyclocross race that happens in my neck of the woods that you all should come down and be a part of. It is the Bike Connecticut Kick 66 CX. That's how I say it. And I think that's the way you should say it too. They say Bike Connecticut Cross. That's the way they say it. Or even BCX. We can all agree both of those options are boring options. The better option is Bike Connecticut Kicks. There's four of them. Bike Connecticut Kicks. Three of them. BikeReg.com/BikeKineticKicks. That's BikeNeticX. That is where you'll find out more information about this race that happens December 10th. December 10th in Haymarket, Virginia. It takes place at a Boy Scout camp that has a pirate ship and a lot of other fun stuff. And these guys do it right. They're going to have lots of primes. They're going to have, or even primes, I guess is the way we're supposed to say it. It's French. They got equal payouts for the women's and the men's races in the elites, the masters, and the single speed. $20 primes for first to ride the starboard run-up. That would be the big hill that's right next to the pirate ship, where I'll be up there along with my buddy Nate announcing the races. They got t-shirts, stainless steel pint cups, fun rides. They'll have a tandem race, fat bike race, anything goes race. You can wear pop. You can wear costumes. You can do it all. But it's a great time and one that you shouldn't miss. If you're heading to the Mid-Atlantic or want to make a special trip in December when you think maybe your cyclocross season is over, it's not. It's a great way to end up season at the Bike Connecticut Kicks race. Go to bikereg.com/BikeKineticX. BikeNeticX. Now, right there, if they had BCX in the URL, that'd be much easier for me. But, you know, do what you can. Anyway, December 10th. We'll see you out there. All right. Before we get to Ben Frederick, we have to talk about health IQ. What if something happened? What if you were killed by pirates? Would your family be taken care of? I know I'm a lawyer, but I don't know all the legalese here. I don't know about pirate attacks and if that is covered under the claim under this policy. I'm assuming it is. We're gonna go that it is, just for this ad, and say that if you had health IQ life insurance, then your family would be taken care of after this unfortunate pirate attack. This premise is not getting any better the deeper I get into it. So I will just tell you that you should go to healthiq.com/CXHairs, take a quick quiz, and then you will see if you're qualified. I know you will, because you're fit and you're smart, and you're going to get qualified for life insurance by Health IQ. And they're looking for people with healthy lifestyles. They're looking for people that they know are a good risk for them, pirates aside, to underwrite. So healthiq.com cxharris. Take the quiz, talk to them on the phone, and then your family will be better off for you. And stay away from pirates, but go to the pirate ship bike race we talked about on December 10th. WideAnglePodium.com. That's where you need to go to listen to all of your favorite shows. And you could even hear more rambling promos like this one. I'm sure Slow Ride does something similar. Not as entertaining, but similar. Anyway, thanks for sticking with me. If you haven't fast-forwarded already, we're about to get to the show. Ben Frederick at the Rafa Clubhouse pop-up in Washington, D.C. We're going to join me and him, and we're going to do that right now.
I won't. It's right there next to the mixing board. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming out. We're going to make sure that our levels are all good. Yeah, that's recording. Because this is going to be a podcast that's going to go out on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, which you all should go to wideanglepodium.com and become a member. But that being said, we're here at Rafa in Washington, D.C. with Ben Frederick. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
So, Ben, this is what? Ben Frederick number four?
Four. Four-peat.
Yeah. All right. Hopefully people have gone and listened to 1 through 3,
mm-hmm.
gotten the whole story. It's a whole story arc. I mean, we should be making a movie out of this.
As long as it's set to like super epic Chariots of Fire music the whole time, all 6 hours of talking that we've done.
So this is more like a Netflix
original.
We're gonna.
What's up, Stranger Things? This is it's the Ben Fred edition.
Yeah. But I want to thank everybody for coming out,
especially yeah, thank you guys.
for a weekday in Georgetown to this awesome spot that Rafa has down here with their pop up. That I know for DC, I think it's just great, and it's a great spot, especially for people coming into town. If you live in DC, especially not around here, you're always like, oh, Georgetown, mm-hmm. but. You know, once you're here, this is great. And we got Saul back there with Acme Pie.
Yes. Know? Let's hear it for Saul. Thank you, Saul.
And before we get into kind of catch up from the last time that we talked, I kind of want to fast forward just to now. And, you know, you're from Virginia.
Correct.
But not D.C., you know.
Correct.
Not really, more out like in Western Virginia.
Not West Virginia.
Not West, but Western Virginia.
Correct.
Yeah. And, but been living in the big city here for a little while,
mm-hmm.
down from Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
How's life in D.C. treating you?
It's going really well, surprisingly, because I definitely grew up in a smaller town. And I've only visited big cities, and I haven't spent more than maybe like 2 weeks at a time. But there are certain really, really cool things about a city as I've gotten, you know, for example, really into coffee. There's a lot of really good coffee here and a lot of different cool restaurants. Like it's, you know, I can, if I wanted to, I could go to a different spot every day and not come close to finding all the good spots.
What's the top of the list right now?
For coffee?
Yeah, let's start with coffee.
Starting with coffee. Yeah, this is a
it's a loaded question.
The most loaded of questions.
You can pass if you want.
So far.
Yeah.
So this is with the big asterisks. I really enjoyed the experience at the coffee bar off of S Street. They've had some really good stuff there. Like they had Verve on espresso that was solid, and they made a really good pour over from Onyx. And my favorite espresso at the moment is the Guatemala that Graced Street Coffee has, and they are a very, very micro roast. They are also in Georgetown. Really enjoyed their stuff.
And food.
Food, the Ethiopian here is like
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
Right now, Share is the, that's a really good spot. There's another really good place in Georgetown called Chaya. They do some cool vegetarian tacos. And there's a really awesome place called Fox Loves Taco up in Brookland.
Yeah, they are local to me. So
yeah,
just,
exactly.
Yeah,
from a really cool, like, neat pickled veg with like purple sweet potato like sauce and beans, to like they had like a cauliflower chorizo and like. It's heavy. It's like a heavy plate of tacos.
Yeah.
And that's
a little bit of a sad transition in that location, but mm-hmm. With a filter leaving us in Northeast. But it's okay. It seems like it
worked
out okay.
By no means is there anything wrong with filter, because there yesterday and it was on point.
But to get to D.C. and to get to enjoy all of this great coffee and food, it was really... like many other things in your life, it was bikes that brought mm-hmm. you down here and got you into this position with Rafa. So, you know, again, before we sort of rewind into the story from the last time that we spoke, I just want you to reassure people who are going to be visiting D.C. that you actually can ride a bike and ride for many hours from your front door without too much hassle.
Relative to the other cities that I visited, absolutely. Like New York, you're on River Road, and that's kind of it, or the Hudson Bike Path. And same, you know, San Francisco, it's you know, an hour of noodling to get across the bridge, and then it's amazing. But here, you know, we can get into Rock Creek Park within like 15 minutes, and it's gorgeous. Like especially with the colors right now. You can take the CNO bike path and get your gravel on. But even then, like at the worst, you're like 30 minutes from being able to like pedal. Like you can straight up pedal.
I mean, you get towards, you know, Falls Road and River Road and Poolsville, and then you're, you know,
you
look down and you're like 70, 80 miles mm-hmm. for your ride. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Right. So can confirm
from outsider view, DC's okay for
DC's
bikes.
With the hashtag DC's okay for bikes.
Yeah, exactly. that was my hedging my bets on that endorsement right there.
Yeah.
So let's do kind of go.
Well, so the reason I'm here.
Yes.
I mean.
No, jump
that makes
in.
Sense. So, like,
we're having a conversation here. This isn't me leading you.
Right. So the reason I'm here is to help with the Rafa pop-up and develop ride programming so that people who want to have a cool space to hang out can go for a ride with some other like-minded bike geeks. I also try to put together events like this one to help develop community and give the DC area a place to come hang out and be able to watch bike races, not on a pirated feed by yourself on a trainer. And so it's like, you know, like I said, like Bike Nerds Unite, like we are weird in our spandex, but we have a lot of fun. And then we're also going to be developing, the Rafa like cycling club, the chapter here, to give more of a community. And it's not necessarily about what you wear or what you ride or how you ride. It's about hanging out with really cool people and giving you a space where you can feel like, you know, you're able to come and like watch bike racing and drink espresso and like, you know, bring your lunch, bring your dinner, come hang out. What are you doing on a Monday night? Well, we have this like rest day replay where we're going to watch the final 50K of, you know, a bike race, or catch up on the, like we watched the 2015 Coxside World Cup, which it was just one of the best.
That was a good one.
Sven Nys gets his final, you know, hurrah against the young guys. And we were able to do that with like 30 people drinking beer and, you know, just hanging out. It's a clubhouse. We want to make it something cool like that. And so I guess my job title would be sharer of Stoke or builder of Stoke for bikes. And it's just been a blast.
Do you have business cards with that on it?
Not yet.
Okay.
Coming soon.
So if people are visiting DC or are already RCC members, what do they do? Where do they go? How do they figure out what you guys are doing?
Rafa.cc/DC. And that'll kind of lead to the pop-up. And we have events on our, on the RCC app, but you don't need to be an RCC member to come hang out. There's going to be certain, you know, events that will be specifically for RCC because we really want to take care of those guys. But there's also wide open events, and so like you can just come on our Saturday ride. It's an open ride for anyone. We'd love to have you. Same with like events like tonight, like where anyone can come. We just want to have a cool, fun place to hang out. And like I'm hoping to, you know, open it up to for teams to do their like end of year banquets or, you know, different parties for different people. You know, we want to be a really fun, accessible space.
What's the timeline for the pop-up?
We're going to be here through January 31st. So we'd love to have you swing by for the those of us who aren't actually physically in the space. Hello, internet. It's a really well-lit space. We have two levels. It's laid out really fun. We have tables and espresso machine. We have Intelligentsia. And as a coffee nerd, I am in charge of the coffee, and I can tell you that it is on point.
Yeah, it's good. Good coffee. Chicago, right?
Chicago.
Yeah. We had our DCCX pre-packet pickup event here, which is awesome. And it's been great. And as far as, you know, as much as I said that stuff earlier about it's tough to get here from other places. If you're on a bike, it's not really. And it's sort of traditionally, this is where rides start, you know, right, mm-hmm. right on the street. So,
yeah.
So you're right in the heart of it as far as the DC cycling community goes.
Mm-hmm. And especially for people coming to visit, we try to take you to the best spots the quickest. And so we have rides midweek, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then our weekend rides, we try to get them done in the morning so that you can either get it done, get home, or have the rest of your day to hang out here and drink coffee.
How are you feeling on these rides? Are you you leaving people in the dust? Or are you letting them ride with you? What's going on?
No, I'm getting my butt kicked.
Okay.
Yeah. people ride fast around here.
Did Rabati do that to you today?
Yep, running like 16 PSI in his PDXs this morning. No, the rides that I've liked to do have been much more about like riding two abreast and meeting the person next to you. Because DC, it's small, but it's big, and the cycling community is definitely varied, but it's surprising how many different places and styles of riding people come from. And so while we've had consistent rides every week, we've had a ton of different people coming out on different things. And so, yeah, you could meet someone from Sacramento who's happening to come visit. We have some guys who work in some of the different embassies around here. And so you get to like hang out and talk to someone from Iceland. Like, that's amazing. And so what we don't want to do is take that opportunity away from you by smashing or taking, you know, making it too hard.
No, I remember when I first moved here, or when we first had kids and they were young, we were going to birthday parties. We go to these birthday parties and I meet everybody there, and I was kind of the token boring white guy
from
the US.
Right.
You know, because everybody else was, you know, just from all over the world with these great experiences, and I was like, I grew up in Iowa.
That's awesome.
But so I kind of was asking that other question because, you know, for you, go back 2 years ago versus now, you're not doing a lot of rides just for leisure and for fun. So,
it's a whole new world. It's this really awesome new thing that I get to experience.
Have you had a new appreciation for riding bikes since it's no longer like, this is what I want my job to be right now? You know, this is not, I'm just going to come out and bash my head into my handlebars. I didn't, that was a bad illusion.
Too soon. People are laughing. It's fine.
You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. It's been really interesting because, I mean, we'll go more into it, but it's been, I think I've been riding again for maybe 5 months with varying levels of consistency and feelings of my heart about it. But what it's been really neat, as opposed to the thing that I do every day, no matter what, for a specific reason. I'm on my bike and I know for the next 3 weeks exactly what I'm doing, essentially. The bike has become more of the thing that's in the background. And what I get to do now is share experiences with people and learn about people and have fun, use it as transportation. But like the through line, like it's just the medium in which all of this really amazing things happen is the bike, as opposed to the bike being the center. It's like, oh, it just happens to be on a bike. And then the bike just happens to get us to, you know, a really cool overlook where we sit and hang out. And I don't have to worry about my legs locking up because I don't have to worry about the interval coming up. Or like the bike is a great way to go, you know what? Ceremony Coffee Roasters is pretty cool. Oh, they're only in Annapolis. Let's ride to Annapolis. You know, like, why not?
Here's my bad DC analogy. The bike is your Juris Doctor.
I don't even know what that means.
It means everybody here has gone to law school and has a law degree because that's going to get them something out of working in DC where they don't have to practice law. So you had the bike that was, you got you to this point.
Right.
And now has led to other things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Sure. He's going to nod and smile.
The last time that we talked, you were happy post-accident that you were able to really leave your room and get out and kind of reintegrate for, I believe, 30 to 45 minutes at a time in the world. How long ago was that? That was
December?
Yeah. So we're coming up on a year.
Yeah.
Almost.
Mm-hmm. What a difference a year
for
makes.
For those who haven't listened to your story, I mean, just briefly, Ben Frederick, racing bikes, good at it, sort of on this upward trajectory, mm-hmm. you know, looking, moving up to Massachusetts, becoming part of the Jam Fund program.
Or around that community.
Around that community, mm-hmm. working, you know, with Cycle Smart coaching, mm-hmm. you know, just to be in that, be in the training, trying to work into riding your bike full time, being a professional racer, freak accident coming off the trail right into the sand, and just going down, hitting your head, and then just kind of your whole life turning on itself from then.
Yeah. So. Pretty good synopsis. I ended up crashing on a very non-technical trail, not going hard, the equivalent of walking down the street for someone. And I fell in just the right way that I was going 20 miles an hour and then I was going no miles an hour. And my head hit the sand and just stopped. There was no bounce. There was no slide. Just all that, you know, momentum straight into...
Yeah, like punching a sandbag, basically.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I didn't even lose consciousness. And that's where, you know, people are like, well, I've been knocked out for 45 minutes, and I'm fine. You look fine. Like, whatever. So, so I didn't even lose consciousness, and then over the next 4 days, things just got, like, harder and harder. I tried to, you know, walk down the street to the bakery, and I had to take a four-hour nap after, and, like, that's kind of weird, and... The Dr. Google was like, don't look at screens. And I'm looking at Google going like, yeah, this makes me feel terrible. I should stop looking at screens. And then ended up just getting worse and worse. And the real impacts of my, you know, it falls under concussion. And what I am healing from is post-concussion syndrome or... MTBI, a mild traumatic brain injury. And so on one hand, it was like, yeah, you didn't even lose consciousness. But on the other hand, like I'm still year and change out and it still affects me every single day.
And it's something that I think that is probably always it seems like we see this so much more now, especially with bike racing and any kind of sports and just a dangerous sports, the way the NFL, you look mm-hmm. at anything like that. And I think it's more just that we're more aware of it and what's going on. And that's kind of changed. But what has, you know, I talked about like the over a year where you weren't, you know, able to even leave your room. What has the progression been just from that time, you know, from really the last time we talked in December until now? And when was this accident? I mean, how long ago are we talking about?
So the accident was August 11th of 2016.
Okay.
So math.
Yeah, over a, I mean, coming up on a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we last talked, I was sitting in my bathroom because that was the quietest part of the house at that time. And I had made a list of notes over a week to make sure that I could like remember exactly what to say, because sometimes I couldn't remember or I'd get hung up halfway through a sentence. And it was really nerve-wracking to kind of go into that, not feel like I was in control of the person that, you know, was trying to talk and do the best that I could for the sponsors that had stayed with me through that really hard time. And so at that point I was, yeah, like just trying to, like a big day was if I hung out with like four friends at dinner and they didn't talk at the same time, and that I made it home before, I call it like cracking and just getting completely mentally overwhelmed. And then that big day would then had like, I'd have to rest for a few days after, and rest meaning like wake up, make breakfast, sit in my room for 2 hours, listen to a podcast. Why do I go Podium Network? listen to a podcast, and then make lunch, and then go back into the dark room, and then listen to more podcasts or audiobooks or whatever, and then make dinner and lay in bed awake because I didn't do anything that day.
And this is all taking place up in Massachusetts. Reason you're staying there, healthcare, you're able to get the treatment under that state plan.
Mm-hmm.
When did it progress to the point, I think a big breakthrough, did you start actually working at the coffee shop up there, or?
That was way...
That's pretty recent.
That's
yeah?
pretty recent.
Okay.
And so, like, I really like coffee. I really like the simplicity of it. And it was something that when I was pretty deep in the shit, it was like, okay, I can't really control much in my life. Like, screw bike racing, screw bikes, screw any sort of sense of what, like, normal is. Because I didn't know. Because I held normal or better or recovered as being top five in the country at riding a bike, which is a pretty lofty goal. And so any progress outside of that is, you know, not much.
Where's that goal now? I mean, that's kind of the question that I've been leading to, so I'll just jump to it. I mean, even looking at the promotional material for this event, I don't know if you saw the copy for it. There's two versions. There's one version that says pro cyclist Ben Frederick. There's another version that says ex-pro cyclist Ben Frederick.
And I've also used the word sabbatical because I don't know yet. When your whole life is pointed for 6 years to being a pro, and then I think we might have talked about it a little bit on the first podcast of like, technically I'm not a pro, but I'm gonna say I'm a pro so that I do the things that a pro does so that I can be professional, right?
Yeah, and it's of course one of those labels, you know, and we have folks in here that could talk about this as well. It's one of those labels that's hard to define, especially in the U.S. I mean, it's much easier in Belgium because they're like, okay, if on your taxes you say you are a professional cyclist, you know, and you have a contract and all this kind of stuff, you're a pro. And if you don't, you don't. And when they line up for their national championship, there are only 18 guys on the line because those are the pros. Mm-hmm. And even though the other guys may be making a living doing it, they're not. So it's one of those things that it's this kind of gray area term. But for you personally, you're at the point where you're, especially C2s, you know, you're podiuming. on the podium pretty regularly, able to get up there. C1s definitely were working towards that. We're talking about cyclocross, getting up there, you know, looking like one of these guys that everybody has their eye on. Okay, Ben Frederick definitely moving up into that top echelon of cyclocross for domestic U.S. cyclocross.
And that was in, you know, with the still very privateer, still very like, man, I spent the first third of the season learning how to turn my cross bike again because I did a full road season leading into it, and you know I'm driving my 91 Honda Civic up to New England to try to like race these guys, and so you know I'm going to put myself in the position where I'm only driving an hour and a half to Providence.
Yeah, and that's and that like, was and that that's was, the big decision. I mean that's right. That's sort of that almost you know finger quote pro move, and that you're right. Like okay, I'm going to uproot my life and move to a place where this is happening, where it's right. easier and to get to races, where the training is there, the mentorship is there,
the community is there, and the support that I had been able to gather was going to set me up to be like hopefully set me up in the best possible scenario to really crack that and be like, yep, here, hi, this is what happens when everything goes right, instead of me just like throwing it together from my Civic.
And you used the word sabbatical. So how old are you now?
I am 28.
28. All right. So still within that range. And we look at a guy like Steven Hyde, who started really late. I mean, funny kind of story from last weekend, and he ended up catching himself, but Dave Toll is talking about Gage Heck racing against Steven Hyde and how, you know, he's got a little mixed up where he's talking about Heck, you know, being sort of the newbie out there if it comes down to a sprint, and then it sort of clicked in his head. He's like, well, Gage Hecht has actually been racing
longer,
a decade longer than Steven Hyde. Right. He's been in much more sprints at many more big road races than Hyde ever has since he started so late.
Right.
So just using that as an example, I mean, this is something that I'm sure in the back of your mind, you're like, well, I'm still in that range.
Definitely still in that range. And I mean, I only started racing bikes when I was 22. So even I'm still young in the sport. But what it comes down to is at least in the next year, if I hit my head again, it's bad news, like bad news.
So that's the biggest thing
that's
right
the
now.
Hugest
like you
thing.
Can't be in competition just because the risk is too high.
Right now, it is total risk assessment.
Okay. Have you put in these big efforts, like just training wise, where you're not getting where effects?
It's one thing to go out and race my friends up a climb and do that once and. That's all well and good, and even then, like, you know, people will go cross-eyed, and the reaction time slows, and that's just kind of what happens. Welcome to riding a bike hard. But for me, when it goes bad, exponentially faster, and it's not something that is super controllable when it does happen. So like, I think I'm good, but like, clearly I'm not good. So that's one element of it. I haven't specifically done like, well, I'm going to go do my threshold efforts even on the Wahoo or whatever, so that when I am ready to race, I'm ready to race. I haven't even gotten to that point because the doc that I have been seeing said that if there's a time that it's okay for you to hit your head again, you need to be able to go 30 days, no symptoms, at full tilt, full life, whatever. I don't go 5 hours, even a year and a half later. And so with that, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I could be dumb and do it, but like, this was a really, really, really terrible experience that I had to go through.
Not something you want to repeat.
Yeah. And knowing that within a year that it would at least be this bad and it could like, I could die if I hit my head similarly, or like even worse, I could become like a vegetable.
It's kind of interesting just the change in perspective and that gives you if you went back 2 years and say, well, what would I sacrifice? What would I do when you were so like kind of tunnel vision into that to race? And you were getting hurt. I mean, you were crashing on the road.
Yeah.
You were, you know, leg issues, whatever else, and getting up and go, I can keep going. It's okay. This kind of changes that whole perspective.
Absolutely. And so, like, just to finish the thought, it's like one thing for me to absorb the risk of riding my bike in DC. Like, that's inherently not super safe. So there's like...
Me and a couple cabs can confirm that.
Exactly. Or even, you know, riding in Northampton or like, you know, but then it, you can extrapolate that down to like walking out the door. But it's another thing to do that with on a variable course that you can crash on by yourself just doing pre-rides. And then you add 60 of the most aggro dudes with the sharpest elbows in the sport that is the most dynamic and fast. Like, that's just not something that I'm stoked about doing today. Like, you know, that's just where I am today. And so I'm not going to enter a cross race this season. We'll see what happens next year. But like, I was only supposed to be down here for 2 weeks, and now I'm going to be here through Thanksgiving, and I might even be here longer. So I still have no idea what,
sure,
what even,
but that's
I'm
a
doing
positive
next Tuesday
thing.
I mean, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And the fact that I'm out here at all, meeting all of these great people and interacting with them, like that's pretty cool too. Like, no one, and we're kind of jumping, you know, streams a little bit, but like,
it's okay.
No one came up to me and was like, man, that like eighth place you got at Supercross Cup really changed me. Right? Like, but with the story that I'm trying to tell and the advocacy that I'm trying to share, because traumatic brain injuries are traumatic. I don't care the level of them, and I don't want to like super bring down the energy here with this, but like, I've had more people go, you've spoken to me in a way that I've never heard anyone be able to like speak to, and the things that you're saying, I thought that I was completely alone and crazy for feeling, because everyone's like, you look fine. What's like, why are you wearing those earplugs? Like, why do we have to leave? Like all of these things that completely consume you when you're in it, that you can't quite, like, until you have one, it's like, you wish you could have empathy, but you can't. Like, I had one of my athletes who had a really bad concussion and he couldn't ride his bike for 2 months. And like, I felt terrible. He was one of my athletes, but you better believe, like, a month into mine, when I'm not getting any better, I was like on the phone with him going like, I am so sorry that this is what you're going through. I'm so sorry. I couldn't relate to you, because it's so much more than like, all right, well, you can't do your easy ride today. Like, it's like, you can't get out of bed today. So bringing that around, it's a really shitty, heavy situation. Racing bikes is cool, but being able to truly affect positivity in people is really gratifying.
Well, even to get into this position now, I mean, I don't know, a friend of mine and from the show, Ed Nesson, who mm-hmm. works for mm-hmm. Rafa. Mm-hmm. I believe that's sort of how this connection happened for you here, with him reaching out. He was, I think, hit by a delivery guy on his bike, and is, you know, just himself getting over the effects of suffering from a TBI as well.
Yeah. And like, you look at the Tom Skudgens, or however you pronounce his last name, from Garmin Cannondale, who, like,
Drapac EF,
yeah, right. Who like, the internet saw him like crash really hard and then get back on the bike, and we're like, no, don't do it. And he's like swerving into traffic,
right, yeah,
into riders. And like, Taylor Finney is not competing for a few races because of concussion protocol, and you know, all the CTE stuff is coming out, and with football and hockey, and it's a conversation that like we haven't had, because it is an invisible injury. It's been such a kind of like downplayed, oh, it's just a concussion, but like, it's not. So,
yeah. And it's also, I think, especially with the football and with those types of sports, it's the type of thing that I think what you said is your biggest CERN or the thing that you're looking out for more, it's more the doing it again.
Yeah, the re-injury.
And the re-injury and just how much easier it is now or how much more susceptible you are.
Yeah, and so with the brain injury, generalizing, like say you break your leg, like healing is X, time equals X. Tear a ligament, it's X times 2. But with like your brain tissue, it's like X times 4 or 5. And it's not even that it fully heals. You have to like reroute stuff, and you can't put your leg in a cast or your brain in a cast like you can your leg. Like you can't not think, you know, that's kind of hard to do. And so it just takes a long time for some people. And you know, I've had 2 crashes previously where I had hit my head, and like hindsight, maybe I had some concussion symptoms, but like this is, I guess I'd call this my second one. Like, I don't want to know what the third one is.
Yeah. Talking to you so many times since this has happened, even before, you know, especially since this has happened, I've sort of done the same thing where I go back throughout my life,
right?
You know, even as a kid thinking, okay, that was pretty bad when
right.
I landed on my head in the pool or wherever else. And, you know, you're
like, no wonder I felt kind of bad for a few days.
Exactly.
And so like what I want people to do is like, take it seriously. Like, I don't want to scare people off the bike by any means. But I also do not want them to like, you know, I can't miss my training. I feel kind of weird, but like I could still race. And like, it's in that first, you know, three weeks where it's just like, man, you could really, if you're not taking it seriously, like people, I've seen people not take a brain injury as seriously as like a Charlie horse. Like, people will not ride because they have a Charlie horse, but you know, if they kind of like feel a little dizzy, they'll still like get after it.
Right. Cause it's not affecting their legs. But even, you know, you talk about this and sort of the indicators for riding a bike, and you kind of briefly mentioned the wearing earplugs. I mean, you still have them in today, so that's still...
Yeah. So generalizing symptoms for people who haven't had a brain injury, like your brain is trying to heal itself, and so it only has so much glycogen. It literally uses glycogen just like your legs. And so when it tries to filter out noise so that you can like have a conversation with someone, it can't keep up. And so it dumps more glycogen in because it's like just spraying inputs all over the place. And then that overwhelms the brain more, and then it sprays more glycogen, and all of a sudden you're like, you just can't handle it, completely overwhelmed, like full on headache, full on anxiety attacks. Like, that is not uncommon. And so, you know, it's still like my margins to I guess fail are much higher, but it's still like the same things will affect me. Like, there was, you know, at the beginning I couldn't look at a phone for more than 2 minutes. Now I can, you know, if I'm on the phone for like an hour, I'll get woozy still, or like I've only been able to watch a few movies in a year and a half, and those were like broken up over 4 days because moving pictures and the sound and the music and the noise still affects my brain. And you know, even if there's more than like 6 people talking at once, it's not easy. Like, I can do it and I can exist in it, but it still affects me, and I still have to make sure that like even on a day here, I'll have to run upstairs and like do some deep breathing and some meditation and a little bit of yoga just to kind of bring it down.
With what you're doing here, I guess question is, I could see how going from racing to then at that high level, or even reaching for a higher level and then not being able to do it anymore. You know, talk about this job being sort of to create stoke. How do you do that? How are you not bitter about not being able to race your bike?
Because I literally lost everything. I spent 2 months more or less completely alone and isolated. And at that time, it's like, well, that's what this is what racing got me. thanks, racing. And you know, the perspective of how am I not bitter at racing? Or I have been.
Do you still follow it?
Loosely.
Follow, you know.
Not, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, no. Like, Bruce Buckley will post, you know, the winner chicken dinner, or you'll have a video, and like, it's to the level where I'll watch it on Instagram, but like, I'm not going to go to YouTube to find out the whole blow by blow. I will. It's still really hard to look at the results sheet.
Right.
It was really hard to be at DCCX.
On especially one hand, there because you had success at that.
Right. And so on one hand, well, I loved that race because that was my fourth cross race ever. And then it was my first UCI podium at the end of it. And, you know, hindsight's 2020 and speculation. But, like, you know, I was racing for the win then, and I had beaten the winner. I had, you know, raced and around with success Gary Warner, and he won, and he did a similar kind of thing where he kind of went all in like I was doing. And so it's easy to speculate, and I'm not saying Kerry that I, you know, whatever, but to be there and not put yourself like in that front group, or looking at the result sheet and being like, man, if Jamie Driscoll's getting sixth, like, I think, you know, I'd be up there too. Or, and I'm not calling out any specific names.
No,
but
no,
like,
not at all. But those were your peers at that time.
Yeah.
So you're sort of like looking at where they're doing up and down in there. And especially you see it as an amateur racer, you know,
if you take
time off. It's exactly the same thing. You see the guys that you were racing with last year. I mean, I saw it when I wasn't racing anymore and I was, you know, Cat 3, still am.
Well,
so, and I'd see those guys, was like, oh, they're winning races now. They're Cat 2s. I could be this now. But
right,
it's like,
exactly. And it's not, I hadn't even really been able to consume any media like for a year. It was like a year before I could even like watch a highlight video. And so like, I'm not really into just media in general. Like I'm not watching Stranger Things on Netflix. Like I still have some like negative associations with like watching videos or like watching races, period.
Sure.
And so coming from that year of just trying to be a normal human, bike racer aside, bike rider aside, athlete aside, to be able to like look at my phone for more than 15, like racing definitely is something that I think I could still get really stoked on. And if I let myself and I can like work through the pain of not being there, and just be a fan of it. Like I'm sure that could happen, but like, I'd love to be able to watch. I'd love to be able to see how well Matthew Vanderpoel is doing without getting a headache. Just because the screen is...
He's doing really well. You don't have to watch.
Yeah. That's
it's almost boring at this point.
That's what I've heard.
So just changing gears a little bit, one of the things I think media related that you did get into, and it seems like it was something that maybe, and you can, I don't want to put words in your mouth, has sort of helped you focus, is picking up a camera in your recovery. And I think, and doing some cool stuff just photography wise, and especially up where you were in Massachusetts, it looks like, you know, getting out into nature and it seems like really appreciating that more.
Absolutely. I used the hashtag slow life, because when I was broken down to, I couldn't have my heart rate go above 95 without symptoms. And after laying in bed.
You were like the movie Speed in reverse.
And the opposite of. And so when you lay in bed for 2.5 months and then you start walking, like it's not hard to get your heart rate that high. And so you have to take breaks. And coming out of darkness, like, man, that moss looks really cool. And like, especially through a 1.8 or 1.4 50 millimeter lens, and it just looks really neat. And you're able to find beauty in the smallest ways. And you're not like, that's something I never would have seen because I'm looking at my power meter.
Right. I loved when you were doing like red things.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so like these are, you know, doing a series like, oh, that's cool. And it kind of all ties. And then telling a story over a few days. And that's, I guess this is how far my life was slowed down, where my enjoyment in certain things, like seeing something red and like taking a picture of it, and then seeing another thing that's red and taking a picture of it, and then the third thing, and then that's my day. And then I go out and see a few more the next day. And then I spend, you know, it takes 2 or 3 days to get through the editing part. And this is just like Instagram filters, right? Like it was pretty heavy. But then
I've spent 6 hours doing a minute video for Instagram before I know how this goes.
Right. And so to be able to like really dive in and really appreciate something is something that like, I don't know. I in a weird way look back on fondly, because like I being able to like not be as slow, like you're riding your bike again, so you're not really noticing what's like the really small little beauty things, and so that was a really really cool thing with me. And then I did the Slow Life actual like black and white series where I tried to visualize a little bit of what a brain injury looks like. But that has led into just having this new thing that, you know, pictures are really fun and they can be really healing and they can bring perspective. And it's led me to have like a creative outlet too. Have been working on a project with the bike company Richie Logic to help explain a little bit more about my journey.
So this is longtime sponsor for you and still sticking with you through all this.
Yeah, they've been amazing. And so soon-ish, can't really release all the details, but I did a trip out to San Francisco where I got to like hang out and ride with Tom Ritchie, and I got to meet some people and kind of just explain my story to them. And then and then through that, like there was a girl who came on a ride, was like, yeah, I'm just recovering from a broken back. And I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. Why are you riding your bike? And like that's what everyone said. Like, oh cool, you're right. Like that's amazing. You're back on your bike. Everything must be fine. And I could kind of see that she was like, yeah, everything's fine. And then on the actual ride, I kind of went up and talked to her and just like, yeah, I'm recovering from a pretty big injury too. And, you know, it's a bad concussion. She's like, that's like, I wish I had broken my femur. Like the concussion is so heavy right now. I only say broken back because that's what people can relate to. But like her world got turned upside down and she had never been as down or depressed or alone feeling or trapped. And she just didn't have the words because no one could relate. And so she was saying like broken back because people were like, oh, broken back. I can kind of conceptualize that. But that was like a fourth of what she was dealing with. And it's all through this project that I was able to have people to give a chance to tell their own story with it. Because like brain injuries, this is the analogy that I've been using. Brain injuries are like snow. Like it all looks white, but each one has its own, you know, own shape, its own... Oh, yeah, well, like, I had a really hard time with computer screens, but I could listen to music right away. Oh, that's amazing, because I still can't do music, but, you know, I was able to go to work. Or, yeah, I was driving the next day, and I still... A year and a half in, I still really struggle. Like, I can't drive for more than 15 minutes. I haven't even tried driving here, but even the week before I came down here in September, doing a 15-minute drive required me to, like, spend half an hour still in my car in the quiet recovering from, and then it would take away potentially hanging out with friends that night. So, yeah, that's...
So we are coming up on an hour.
So easy to talk to you. Yeah.
I did want to see if anybody had any questions for you before that. Just to sort of sum it up, just to bring, you know, bring it back up, just looking forward. What, and it doesn't have to be bikes or anything, but just sort of generally, I mean, what are the kind of short-term or even long-term life goals? What are you looking forward to now? I mean, moving forward, you've gone through all of this. You seem like you're on the uptick. So what's it that's sort of getting you stoked, to use that word? And then we're going to make fun of your Cat 5 tattoo on your pants.
Shh. Ouch. Real talk, I don't know. I was really, really into Western Massachusetts life, where I got to make coffee every morning and talk to people about coffee and ride a 93 specialized rock hopper to and from work on the bike path, and like getting really into yoga. That was awesome. And I, you know, I could totally keep doing that. And then this opportunity came up, and it's been like, it's been a whirlwind of, I'm going to only be in town for 2 weeks, and then I'm going to come back for this podcast, and then I might come back over the holidays too. I got here in September, and I haven't, or October, like I haven't left yet. So I've been here for a while, and I'm just kind of like getting through tomorrow. And so looking forward, I don't know. I think I could do a really good job, sharing Stoke, however that looks. I could also love going back home and playing coffee.
Here's an easier question for you. What, if you had one, was your race weight, and how far are you away from that now? Because it looks like you could race tomorrow.
So, this, you're making me blush, and it's a thing. I'm actually about 15 pounds under my race weight.
Okay.
Which is indicative of a few things.
Obviously, there's probably some muscle loss in there.
Huge amount of muscle loss. Yeah. And you know what I don't have to train for? Being a pro racer. You know what you need a lot of to be a pro racer? Muscle. And, like, you know, I'm not going out there and, like, I'm not doing 5x5s over 400
watts.
Many
people who stop racing who, this may come as a surprise to you, go the other way.
Yeah, well, I'm going to pull the vegan card here and be like, well, I eat a lot of plants.
There you go.
And, I mean, like, not bringing it too heavy, but, like, it's a weird thing to try to come out of being a pro bike racer and eating for a specific purpose and then not having that guiding light anymore. It's still something that I'm, you know, dealing with on a daily basis, but... definitely, as proof by how many times I've gotten dropped on some of these rides, it's not, my power to weight is...
Skinny isn't everything.
Skinny is not, I am not Joe Dombrowski by any means.
All right. Before we wrap things up, anybody have any questions? You could just shout them out, and yes, Phil.
Days in darkness.
Let me just repeat it, just so we make sure that we get it on there. But basically, during those 2.5 months when you're in your room, what are you doing from day to day? How are you making it through in that darkness?
A really, really close friend of mine gave me the analogy of you're on a ship, it's in a storm, you're holding on to the railing, and you're just focused on that railing, because if you step back, you're looking at the deck of the ship that's moving, and then you step back a little bit further, and then you're looking at the bow of the ship that's moving, and then you're seeing the lightning, and then the waves, and then it's too much. And so there was so many days when it was just like, just freaking hold on to the railing. And I mean, real talk, like, how did I get through day to day? Some days it was like literally crying for 2 hours on the phone with a friend from home that I couldn't get to because I was too stuck in the room, because I couldn't be in a car for more than 5 minutes without like having an anxiety attack. But practically, I would wear headphones and like noise canceling headphones and listen to podcasts or audiobooks, as long as they weren't too stimulating, because that would make me nauseous, but they had to still hold my interest, because if my mind started spinning, that would bring symptoms up. And I had just the most incredible community like reach out. They didn't know me before the accident at all. I was just kind of the new kid on the block. But they had a sign up to like come give Ben a hug and sit with him for 15 minutes, because that's all I could handle. But like those kind of things were like the things that I would hold on to. Adapting and not accepting. Like accepting kind of has this like, you don't have control over the situation, but like I'm adapting to something that is. And so because of that, what is I have a brain injury, and I'm adapting to it by not watching movies, by having blackout curtains, by, you know, doing these certain things.
Yeah. And that community is like classic Massachusetts, where they're all hard and they're all just going to not talk to you and be like, you know, standoffish until you know them. And all of a sudden then they're all like just big softies.
Yep. Yep. Thank you. Thank you guys. You know who you are.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
You know, I went through similar things myself. And one of the things that I was curious about in your case and what you went through, was it the fact that physically you were different because of your brain? Or was it just the emotional and mental challenges that were the harder for you? Because I know for me, it was the mental part was the worst.
So quickly, the question being, was it the physical changes with your brain, with the injury, or was it sort of the mental fallout from that affected you the most? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Short answer is yes to both. Because physically, like when you lose count past six, like that's heavy. And acknowledging that that's, oh, cool, that's my reality. But then I think the things that have lasted the longest are the physical stimulus coming in and not being able to like process that, like those day-to-day things. But there's also been like dealing with the fact that my whole personality has changed. Like a lot, there's still through lines, but like I am definitely not just because of the experience, but like physically my brain is not the same brain that it was. And because of that, that's the core of who you are, right? So, like, I am literally not the same person that I was.
Got something upbeat to end this on?
Yeah.
So. Well, I do. Well, Ben, I will end it on an upbeat note, saying that it's before the accident, it was really fun to follow your story, and it was always fun to talk to you. It's still fun to talk to you, but just it was a joy to watch that rise. And just I think what you've talked about tonight, and just that realization that what you're doing now, being able to share your story, being able to relate to people is, you know, providing even more at this point, and it's mm-hmm. it's truly at this point a service that, that you're giving back, which is awesome. You know, we like, as cyclists, we really are big on community.
Yeah.
We're big on trying to volunteer and you know, giving back to that community. And I think in your way you're doing that as well, just for knowing all the people who have come up to you and have had similar situations, that, you know, they know that you're somebody that is willing to talk to them. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And just for anyone who is suffering or has suffered or maybe will suffer, like, hold on through the shit, because the roses are pretty good. Like, I'm really starting to see and smell the roses that I was taking pictures of when I was deep in the shit. The fact that I'm like real talk, every time I put on a kit now, I'm getting paid more than I was getting paid as a professional cyclist. And that wouldn't have happened if I was a professional. You know, like, you can kind of extrapolate that. And it's not about money. It's definitely, you know, vehemently not about money. But, and...
It's your Juris Doctor degree. I'm sticking with this.
I get to wear really well-made clothes that I've been a fan of for years that I wouldn't have been able to do without my life getting turned upside down. I wouldn't be able to, like, hang out with you guys and, you know, meet Sarah, see Hamilton again, you know, meet Hamza and hang out with my buddy Alex. And, you know, I have people that I wouldn't have in my life otherwise. And that's pretty cool. Like, yeah, I don't get to line up on a start line yet. Like, but look at all the masters racers who are racing well until, you know, like, it's, I don't know, things are pretty awesome.
That's good to hear. Well, thank you all for coming out.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you for Rafa for having us out tonight. Really appreciate it.
And thank you, Saul, for the pie. And
thank you, Saul.
And everything. So thank you guys. I really can't thank you enough for coming out and all the listeners for all the words and encouragement through the heavy stuff. Cheers.
Awesome.
Thank you.